Welcome to The Ether. Today is Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. Today on The Ether, part two of the two-part CFI space, using Cosmos yields effectively and other random stuff. Let's take a listen.
Yeah, and I mean, you could, like, for those gamers, NFTs can be the next big thing, because now you can be like robbed for your shit like forever. Like, if you know, NFTs get stolen.
Yeah, but you know, like, we were used to getting our shit stolen in certain games, right? Like, if you were an Ultima Online back in the late 90s, a big gang of dudes would come by and like steal all your shit, and you thought, oh yeah, I got my, you know, like, you know, and that was just part of the game, like, that was just normal. So it's fine as long as, like, but you know, the funny thing is, if you make a game too easy, and you don't have those things, the equipment and shit within the game is not worth anything, right? Like, there is a correlation between how much stuff in the game is worth and how hard it is to get and how hard it is to keep, right? It's the same as like buying, like, it's like gold. Think about gold in real life, right? If it was infinite quantities, it would be not so valuable. If it's sufficiently scarce, hard to get, and then you have to store it, so it sort of keep it too, right? Like, you got to put it in a bank account, you got to, you know, or in a safety deposit box, you got to, you know, defend it with weapons or whatever. Like, that sort of adds to the weird value of it. And without it, there's no game, right? If it's, so this is the other thing. Like, let's say you have, there was a game recently, what was it called? Shit. So there's a game company that released one on Terra, and they had these NFTs you would buy, like, for, you know, armor and swords and whatnot. And if you bought like the NFTs in the marketplace, it's sort of a cash grab by the game company. What happens is, if you buy all the cool equipment, you can race through the game really quickly. Like, so what? In other words, you just paid $500 for a cheat code. Like, if all you want to do is win the game quickly, I could just give you the cheat codes, like up, up, down, down, A, B, you know, like up, up, down, down, left, right, what is it, A, B, 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 A or something? It's like the Contra cheat code of old. Like, at the end of the day, if all you want is a cheat code, the NFTs don't make any sense. So, like, selling NFTs as some sort of cash grab and using real world cash to give you in-game advantage is something that, like, a lot of these app-based video games have done for quite some time. The Kim Kardashian people, the Kim Kardashian app has made an ungodly amount of money. Like, it's like, you'd be shocked how much those people made selling, like, whatever, like, Kim Kardashian sunglass cartoon shit on the video game. And so people are willing to pay crazy money for weird shit. But gamers tend to get pissed off at that sort of thing, because if someone could just simply be rich, right, they can bring $100,000 in and they can compete with you because they can buy a bigger weapon, even though you're 10 times better a gamer because you started from the beginning, but they can buy some big bazooka and just blow you away with it. Like, it makes no sense. Like, this is why, like, Steam has not really pushed into the gaming thing with selling, like, too many in-game assets, because if you do that, it just wrecks the game. Like, are they there to sell you a game? Or are they there to sell you, like, digital assets that pretend to be like a game? That's the problem they run into. And everyone has, all of you have, I'm sure, done this. You pick, like, fucking Candy Crush or whatever, and you get to some level and you're like, shit, I can't pass this. Am I going to pay this dollar or whatever for the extra points? And then, you know, you do that once or twice, and then you're like, fuck this. These games are stupid. Like, they make no sense. They always make them just hard enough to where you can't play them anymore, and you got to pay some extra. Pay to play kind of thing, right? So, and that's fine. Like, they make money that way, and, you know, they've got to make money somehow. but it feels very artificial in the gameplay, right? A subscription to like a MMO, for example, at least it feels legit. You're paying money, you're paying for a subscription, you're paying fees, they're building you levels, you're getting access to this server. You feel like you're paying something rational and everybody can play this and get an equal footing in the game. There's a Netflix series actually that's worth watching. It's called, it's on video games. I'm trying to think what it's called. It's like they look at like the origin of Mario Brothers and a lot of other Pac-Man and everything. I forget the name of it. When games were something or whatever. Anyway, you might want to pull this, the video game document. It's fantastic, old school video game, like in talking about it. And one of the things that struck me as very interesting was when you go and play Pac-Man, right? You go play one of the old, you know, these old video games that were in arcade. You put a quarter into the machine and you are equal to everybody else on the planet that's playing this game at that moment, right? Like you have no special advantages except for that quarter. And you could play for hours if you're really good. And if you suck and the ghosts kill you, well, that's that, right? But everybody started out at a certain point. If the ghost killed you, you died, and you put another quarter in, you paid to play, and you could go longer if you were good at it, and you, if not, but you couldn't put in a dollar into the damn thing and win the game, right? Like my uncle owned an arcade, you know, in like somewhere in upstate New York back in the day. And it was funny, like Mortal Kombat and some of this other shit was on there. And we'd go over there and he has that, you know, remember like you could, if you own the arcade, you just push a little button inside the machine and it'll give you a bunch of free games. So remember some of those games you could actually, they got to the point where they sucked you in. It wasn't like, okay, if you lose, you have to start the game from the very beginning. They eventually got to the point where, remember, video games, you could pay and you could continue the story. Remember that? Like, so like, you're like, okay, I can't get past this level, but if I, you know, keep putting money in, I can keep killing shit. So what we'd do is there, we'd spend the whole day there and he'd just like ring up the fucking thing and give you like 99 credits or whatever in the machine. And we would go there and just knock out like whatever game, Mortal Kombat or whatever. And maybe weren't that good at it, but we can quote unquote finish the game, especially the ones with a story and such. Because like we were not going to sit there and learn this thing on an arcade paying a quarter at a time. Like I didn't have that kind of money. Shit, I could barely play one, you know, for an hour, much less for 4 hours and finish the whole game. And you certainly weren't going to be skilled enough to play it straight on without without, you know, attaining the skills that required lots and lots of money to put in. Right. So like eventually they got to the point where like when console games came out, they're like, okay, you already bought the game. You're like, you're not going to want to just die and start over every single time. So then they had the save games and all the other shit that we think about in games today, right? Like save games were not a thing originally. That was like introduced along the way. I remember some of the original Sierra games on, you know, Windows and Macs and stuff like Space Quest and Leisure Suit Larry and the Land of the Lounge Lizards and all those fun games. And like you would start at the beginning and like if you died, then you start that shit all over again. And it was, they were good enough to where that was worth, like, it was fun doing that for a while. But like eventually the save game emerged. I don't remember which game first had saves on it. And that changed. But in that whole course of things, if all you had to do is pay more money, like you just had to bring an NFT in or you had, you paid money to get ahead, those games would have been wrecked, right? There's no way you can just transplant crypto and NFTs into those types of games and then suddenly get a better game. What you do when you introduce real world money into a game, like I go to work, I make money, and now I'm going to buy video game stuff with it, not just a subscription to play or a quarter to play the game, but I'm going to buy like a better Pac-Man, right? Like let's say, for example, you put a dollar into Pac-Man instead of a quarter, you have Super Pac-Man, and now you can eat up a bunch more ghosts faster or something, right? Like that's the kind of advantage that the gamer doesn't really want to see. And I think the problem with sort of like immutable devices within games create the problem where you continue to inflate the number of in-game items and the immutable items, but you have to have a way of destroying them also, otherwise too many of them. This happens with video game gold. Mudflation at its core is, remember when you play a video game, if you play Fallout or you play Ultima Online, play whatever video game you're talking about, like World of Warcraft, notice you can get as much gold as you possibly want, right? There's a max proof of work speed that you can get that gold at, right? There are certain farms where you kill more monsters, or there's like certain dragons, you get more gold, or Maybe you can trade it with friends or whatever, right? You have different ways to get gold in the game. But at the end of the day, the amount of gold is infinite, right? So if you have enough people playing on a server for enough time, so much gold, everyone's like, fuck, we have too much gold, but nobody has anything to sell for that gold, right? Nobody wants your gold because the only useful items are the ones that can kill the dragons and stuff, and you can't buy that stuff with gold, right? Because they what the video game manufacturers do is they basically make interesting items where, like, for example, they're soulbound. Like, I know Ethereum, I believe, has a project called, I think, Soulbound. And the idea is that, like, that is tied to you. So in the video game world, like, that's your account, your video game account. A sword is tied to you because you earned it killing a dragon, right? So now you have this sword and you earned it. You can't hand it to someone else so that they can kill all sorts of monsters. And therefore, there is, interestingly, a reason to play the game because you can't get these items without playing. But the other problem is it makes the gold worthless. If you think about it, because if you can't buy any of the good shit with the gold, right, then the game becomes useless. So then what do? Then they create all sorts of crafting shit. They're like, okay, we need to find a use for this gold, right? Like, it's like making crypto and then figuring out what to use it for afterwards. Like, nobody's figured out what to use it for. So you have this video game gold and they're like, okay, well, let's create a crafting engine. You can, like, combine, like, obsidian and peridots and steel and shit, make a better sword. Or maybe you can upgrade the swords you get from the dragon using the gold bot stuff. So then you create all these mechanisms to create economies to make the gold useful, to make the crafting items useful, to make old items useful, and to make new items useful. So, for example, like, you might have, like, you killed 10 dragons and you have 10 swords from each of them. Now you can take those 10 swords and trade them in for one super sword that you forged together, right? Like, these kinds of mechanics lead to, like, deflationary tactics to destroy the old, say, swords, or call them NFTs now. And that's a thing, like, where you could say, for example, let's say for the neat rare mint, you can increase your chance of a legendary mint by burning a dozen of the, like, common mint, for example. These kind of, like, game tactics. All that shit has been done in video games forever, right? Like, how many times have you been in a crafting environment in a video game where, like, okay, you combine this shit to make a sword, but it's possible to fail and all the items get destroyed? that was a kind of thing, like, EverQuest call, where it's like you can fail a transaction and you'll lose all your shit. I think they call that Ethereum now, actually. you lose your shit when the transaction fails. That was a thing in some games. That was fascinating. But yeah, all these video game economics are very cool. So anyway, so yeah, if anyone has any kind of video game stories or fun, hold up a second. I'm getting a text message I got to answer. Give me just a sec, guys. Someone's
No worries. I was just curious. I was listening, yeah, and that thought just popped into my head. I'm working on. I'm thinking about something, metaverse related. Not like, but yeah, started to think about, is there any projects? What about, would people, like, you in the audience, would you like any metaverse project on Cosmos? Can we get, like, hands?
Yeah, if people have some ideas of what they want to see in terms of so-called metaverses, games, whatever, like, yeah, feel free to hop on.
Or if you would, like, even play, like, can you put a clapping emoji?
I think a lot of the Twitter Spaces nerds have already become nerds where video games actually aren't interesting enough anymore. That's why we have to lose a lot of money in crypto to, like, get that, like, you know, that sense of real world metaverse loss. So I don't know if the stress levels in a video game are sufficient anymore for this crowd. So that's also the funny thing I've noticed that happens. If you play a lot of MMO style games, like, normal video games start becoming shitty for you, which is hilarious because it just doesn't have enough, like, team activity and adrenaline. And then if you play enough of those games, you get bored if you're not at the top of the game. And eventually you're like, okay, metaverse games suck. So it's interesting how, like, psychologically metaverse or just MMOs and video games change who you are. It changes how you behave and it changes your, like, view on games over time. So that's the tricky part about these things, is how do you you're actually creating games that people want to play long term. And I think my argument has been that, like, that's called life. Whether you play it in video games, Pac-Man, you know, World of Warcraft or whatever, it's like it doesn't really matter. There's nothing dramatically more useful about it happening in a video game space than in real life necessarily. That's my take on it. But yeah, Baron, what's up?
Hey, real quick, I'm not sure if anyone has followed just regular cross-platform gaming that you can earn tokens, you know, crypto at this point in time. I know we're talking about in like Web3, creating GPU, Bitcoin mining. But has anyone followed like Razer program, which isn't Razer themselves, but they're tokenizing their own utility token, Razer token, for you know, basically from the games that you currently play, let's say like CSGO or Fortnite, that you can basically earn tokens.
Earn what type of tokens? You mean for creating content or for like winning tournaments? What do you mean?
Either. But mostly from tournaments, squatting up, and of course, it's utility tokens, so they only work within their own ecosphere, which is the Razer platform. But I know they were in the news previously. They made a horrible mining BTC GPU. Basically, people were opt-in, being able to mine tokens for the gameplay. However, they were ownership of their own Bitcoin. But they have partnerships with other subsidiaries that are looking more into how to mine different tokens along with earning the Razer token.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of these, so what you're getting at essentially when you tie like proof of work mining activities with various types of tokens and yield is you're essentially talking about the securitization of a Bitcoin mine, which, you know, it can be done. And I think there was a Spaces on earlier where a guy that was overseeing an operation like that since about 2014, since like Bitcoin is like $250 or something, the project, like the ROI was not that different from doing owning a securitized Bitcoin mining operation compared to just owning Bitcoin itself, which is hilarious. There's like eventually an arbitrage opportunity that happens there, which is why, by the way, Bitcoin tends to float towards its mining price. So I don't know if like these kinds of tactics can really fuel like a metaverse space or whatever. Like, you know, can you use it to finance a separate operation? I don't know. Like, I use a layer to, like, essentially, like, you bring in money somehow. I'm not so sure. I think in metaverse play, the only ways to make any money are you're either providing a service or you're providing content. So goods and services within that ecosystem. So if you're a creator, so let's say you're creating a level for a video game. Okay, I can understand paying for that. Let's say you're creating content, like let's say, you know, you're playing Bar Wench and you're literally RP role playing, you know, some character in the game and people tip you for this. Okay, I can understand that, right? Like we go to watch movies now, we go watch plays in Broadway and we pay for that sort of experience, right? So I can imagine actors in metaverse spaces getting paid for literally acting. It'd be like a Westworld type situation. I get that. But as far as like just having some sort of play to earn, where essentially you're just making money, just doing something passively, and largely being a content consumer, I don't see long-term that you're going to be a content consumer and make money. Unless that platform believes they can monetize the success of more users on the platform. So that would be like where they would pay out more in play to earn earnings early in the game to bring tons of users in. But then what will happen is you'll get an Axie Infinity like event where you'll have some downturn in the market and all of those users are going to leave because they were here for one thing, and that's to make money. And now they're losing money. And it's just the game becomes sort of stupid, especially if the game sort of sucks to begin with. And you just convince yourself it was good because you're making money. then you create another risk attack vector for the video game because you literally thought it was fun only because you were making a buck, right? So, and it happens in crypto. Think about crypto, right? Everyone's talking about crypto when it's going up because you're having fun, shit's going up, and like whatever. When it's going down, everyone's upset. No one wants to talk about it. It's no different in the video game space. The real world and video game psychology are literally identical. And then you will find that like when your tokens are going down in value, you're pissed and you don't feel like playing, right? Like you want to take your ball and go home, essentially. So that's kind of my observation in the like crypto is just a metaphor, not a metaphor, but like a comparison metaverse. A world of people playing a game, trying to make money against each other, buying and selling, right? Like everyone can't be a winner because like I might buy, you know, high and, you know, Dave dumps on me and then, you know, I buy a low and then he dumps on me again. In the So it's like this, it's a system whereby some people are trying to take money out of the hands of others. And it's just a one big video game. That's the other thing with crypto. It's not really clear. You need another video game. You already have one and you're already sort of like have strategies and game. And in other words, I don't think you have to obfuscate crypto tactics, whether it's NFT buying and selling, whether it's DeFi, with putting a video game layer on top of that. It already is a video game. It's actually already a video game, more complicated and more interesting to research in many ways than actual video games, right? With tons and tons of players creating tons and tons of content and action and leverage and this and that and all sorts of shenanigans going on. So, you know, it's all one big video game at the end, in my view.
No, I totally agree with you. My reasoning even for asking this was like, because Cosmos is, I mean, I see it as a different kind of chain. I mean, the people, like, we can see it during the bear markets, how Cosmos chains have been, like, performing, you know? And I started to think, like, wait, there's no metaverse? And I started to think that there must be a reason. But I think to the bottom of the reasons.
Well, it's not that I think there's no metaverse. I think we are already sort of in it. Like you and I are chatting here on this, you know, stupid app or whatever, wasting our evening. We're sort of on it. We're just using our imagination. Like, I don't know what you look like. You don't know what I look like. It's no different than like seeing an avatar in a video game. Like if you think about like, you know, what I liked about EverQuest in particular, as a game, I used to play a wizard character and enchanter character. And what was cool about the game is that the magic user characters used to have a lot of downtime. Some people didn't like the downtime, meaning waiting for your magic points to recover so you can now shoot your missiles again or whatever. That was a thing. And what was nice about it is while my character was sitting there regaining magic, I had no obligations because, well, I couldn't do shit anyway, and I could go and like chat on IRC or something else, right? So what's fun about DeFi is like, for me, maybe like chatting like this with you guys is like that downtime was just kind of a fun time to sort of like, you know, chit chat with friends on there and just, you know, BS, and we'd go farm objects and create, you know, kill things. And the most of the fun was actually the team and hanging out with them and seeing them every day and getting to know their play style and kind of, you know, like then them learning your play style and then you coming up with a system to like kill monsters and shit. Right. So a lot of that social experience was what made that fun, not necessarily just that it was a game, but that the people in it were sort of real and had to coordinate. And some of them would have bitchy days and some days you'd plan to do something. Not everyone showed up and now you're complaining about that, right? All of those challenges is what made it kind of fun. Like you know what I'm talking about. Like if you've played any number of these games, you've experienced every single thing I'm talking about, obviously. But I think we sort of already do that already. And then like, if there are big games coming to like a Cosmos chain and such, it makes sense to come to Cosmos. In fact, I think like Cosmos is the easiest place to probably deploy something like frequent flyer airline miles. You could deploy almost any major traditional finance kind of like
system, like systems, gift cards, anything like that you could deploy on Cosmos pretty readily at this point with existing tech. Nothing fancy has to be done. Like, Fandango could start movie points or some shit on a blockchain. And, you know, that would be pretty easy to spin up, actually. You know, you get a group of developers and next thing you know, you're on blockchain and, you know, buying and selling things. So I think a lot of things that you traditionally use will come to a blockchain space. And there's no obvious reason why more and more games won't emerge. I'm just not sure, like maybe I'm just getting old, but I'm just not sure that all of those games will be necessarily any more fun than traditional games. Making great games is really, really hard. And as you guys probably know this, like, I'm sure you've taken home some fancy ass PlayStation 5 game. You bought the thing and the game sucked, even though the graphics are amazing, right? Like many of us experienced that many, many times.
Well, I mean, I remember you talked about Diablo, and I played it back in the day in the 2000. And one of its, you know, best things about it was the uniqueness and scarcity of the items. But then people started duplicating them, because I remember going on eBay and buying and selling duplicated stuff all the time, you know, until they finally, you know, nailed down. And same thing happened with Diablo 3. But I think what they're doing is they're just trying to jump the gun too far with the NFT and gaming aspect. So they're building it from a tech standpoint. And to your point, you know, there has to be a clean, polished, friendly and accessible interface, like on the PlayStation.
Steve Jobs used to have a comment very specific about this, what you just described. And that was, you get a bunch of engineers in the room and you're like, hey, we have this new tech. We have this new like capability. Let's figure out what product we can build around it.
Remember? What can we ruin with it?
what kind of product can we build around it? Instead, he's like, you might pull this up on YouTube or whatever, where he like type in Steve Jobs and heckler and you'll see the video I'm talking about. But he this is a great recording back in the day. And he kind of says, hey, look, when the laser printer came out, blah, 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 Canon has, you know, invented the laser printer. But like when you look at what Apple did, he's like, I can't even like, I don't want to have to explain to you what a laser printer does. All I want to show you is a piece of paper with some writing on it and say, can you do this with this? Right. And I can sell that. Like if I just show you this piece of paper and look, this came out of this printer, I can sell that. So the end product is the key, the underlying tech, the general public. Even now, you guys probably have no fucking clue how a laser printer works, right? So, like, or marginally, yet you use it all the time, right? That's the key.
Like, back to the Diablo point, if they just built it in with just the security aspect, they'd get a lot more familiar with it, and it'd be a much more simple application to prove the verify that the whatever sword in the game is, you know, a unique item. And that's what they already are doing. They're just not using the blockchain infrastructure behind the scenes, you know, and they have the distributed ledger, you know, it's there. It's just not using the true blockchain. So maybe that's where the disconnect is.
And actually, the duping within video games was a substantial part of the Bitcoin white paper and how it emerged the way it did. I don't know if you like kind of understood that part of it. The game element to like the verifiable scarcity point of Bitcoin actually comes from this. We used to in EverQuest, I remember this is back like 1999. Diablo at that time, I can't remember, but I don't think when did Diablo 3 come out? That was later, I think, online. It was a little bit later. But you're right, like duping was a problem and anti-duping measures were a big thing. And games eventually had to figure out how to like inherently prevent duping from happening. I remember our guild leader, who went on to become like lead creative for World of Warcraft, like he got in trouble for duping. It was like the most famous duping event in the history of MMOs when he did it, because he was one of the most well-known characters in any video game at the time. And it was actually kind of funny. Like, so our guild sort of went through that, and I guess he he had verifiably duped some shit in the game and they banned his account and he had to start over. Which wasn't a big deal for us. We were like the top guild in the entire like world or whatever, and 500,000 people. And I have a whole story about that. But anyway, the duping was a big factor. And you're right. Like when duping became a thing, the game starts to get shitty because you're like, wait a minute, why do I want to spend this much time doing it if, you know, this asshole over here can do it by just duping? The most hardcore gamers, though, like that played like EQ, Escape or whatever, a lot of people ended up going off and playing those games on new servers eventually when those games were shut down by the main companies. And once all the updates were done and all the duping was impossible, people really enjoyed that raw, basic, good game experience. It wasn't about necessarily getting the top shit. It was getting together with a group of people and playing a great game, even from the very beginning, was a really, really fun thing. And these are not people that were into duping and all that, because these are the more hardcore players, right? So if you guys want to like play a game where like you find a lot more like more legit gamers, go to old games that people like the companies have just abandoned, and they have servers running like EverQuest Classic and stuff, and start playing on that, and you'll see what kind of gamers you find. These are not, this is like, you know, you'll find like people that are like crypto OG type people, like real serious fucking gamers. And they are not the ones that are that interested in duping or anything else, because they want to play the game legit, right? So if you want that kind of ethos, that's where you go. You don't go to the brand new games for sure. You'll get a much better gaming experience in the old games. I promise you. Try it out. When you got like hop on to EverQuest Original, you'll be like, the graphics suck on this, but the game is fun because the people are great.
Anyway. Oh, but whenever you go and check the old games, the graphics always get to you. Like, how did I think this was good graphics?
Yeah, EQ was like the first serious first-person capable MMO back then, right? And the music was kind of okay, and actually the music was pretty good. And the experience, though, felt very immersive, man. Like, you use your imagination, right? Because you don't really think, like, you're not killing the dragon because it looks like a perfect dragon. It's just, you know, it's hard. You know, there's tactics involved. Like, look at a chessboard, for example, right? How many people play chess? Look at Go with a bunch of black and white beads. Like, literally, there's nothing to look at. Like, there's no special graphics, nothing cool to look at. The tactics and the strategy, the team play and everything else make it great. Like, what, like go to a soccer pitch or whatever, a football pitch. Like, you're going to like, how interesting is a football field? Like two goals and like a ball and a ball with some like hexagons on it. There's not shit to look at there. Right. But the gameplay makes it interesting. Right. Yeah. Those graphics, yeah, the graphics have almost no relationship to how fun these things are. Unreal 5 looks amazing, by the way, if you've seen all the previews of it. If you guys haven't watched the Unreal 5 previews, go pull up YouTube and like pull up the shit people have created. Like some of the material is indistinguishable from reality. That's how good the graphics are. I think the average game within another generation will be like nearly indistinguishable from reality. But the thing is, like, great graphics, we have tons and tons of games, right? Like, non-AAA games that, like, 95% of them just, like, either suck or extremely derivative or made by mediocre game designers. Like, they're just not that impressive, and you immediately feel it. Like, there's so many games you feel like, tell me if I'm wrong here, but there's so many games that you play within a few hours, you can't even get latched onto them. It doesn't even matter with how good the graphics are. You're like, this is boring. And you're like, I wasted $50 on this fucking thing. And you go and take it back to your game or whatever and try to get something back for it under the 1 week warranty or whatever. That's a mic. if you've done that, raise your hand. You're like, this game blows. Pretty much everyone. Anyway, yeah. What other MMOs have you played, guys? Like anything really great? Like that blew you away that you want to see like in a crypto universe kind of thing? I know Fildo's down there. He likes fishing, I think. that's like a solitaire type of game. Catching fish, throwing them back in the water. Catching fish, throwing them back in the water. Just different metaverse.
You know, actually Jacob was mentioning a secret poker game. And I really want to check out you know, a poker game with a polished infrastructure on a blockchain. I think that'd be pretty cool too. That way you can verify that you're not getting cheated by the system.
That's a good point. Yeah. No, front running resistance is perfect for that kind of gaming. That's a great point. And you have to have randomization too, right? So both of those things have to be verifiable. Yeah, that's a great point. Secrets should probably be a great place for that. Hey, Hank, what's up?
Hey, long time no see.
Yeah, hanging out.
But yeah, I was interested to see like what you think about the like decentralized games. You were talking about how so many people are like pissed off, like, oh, this sword sucks compared to this one, and this one's terrible. We should have done the game in this way. And the like decentralization blockchain aspect of I think solves that. I mean, it's of course more heads you add in, the shittier it gets, but I think there's something there.
Yeah, I think the corollaries for me, like if you think about real life, right? Somehow or another, with like the governance in your country sort of makes it, right? And then you have like artists, you have musicians. Forget about gaming, but just think about real life. And you say, well, somehow or another, the human experience of civilization and creating a lot of cool shit, you know, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, people talk to each other. They do interesting things. Some experiences are more interesting than others. Some games, even in real life, like professional sports, for example, some are better than others. Some of them you like and other people don't. And other people, you like some that everyone likes or whatever, right? So those kinds of experiences, the same thing will continue to occur in whatever sort of like video game universe that you generate. I don't think any of the laws of entertainment or the laws of entertainment or the laws of gaming or whatever change much, unless like our brain specifically changes as a result of this. And that changes everything. But right now, like whether you put a pair of goggles on and walk around, or whether you in some kind of gaming environment, yeah, you could modify the physics and I can jump off a building and shit in like my face. What is that called? The little Facebook Meta Oculus. Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Like, you know, it feels like I'm getting, you know, smacked with a lightsaber or whatever. You know, those things remain interesting for a little while, but at the end of the day, they're just derivative versions of the world we already exist in. When you blend in some other tactics, like, sort of AI or things that make you lose track of time, those could create maybe some experiences that are not so obvious to you in the regular world. But I don't think that there's anything like if someone has a killer game that they can think of in their head that they know for sure is going to be the big hit in the future in that utilizes all these techs. I haven't seen it yet. Like even the Ready Player One sort of version of the universe. Like we were doing that shit on EverQuest in the 90s. Like well, there's really virtually nothing that matters that was portrayed on Ready Player One that isn't already there in MMO today. Like, you know, outside of the graphics, right? There just isn't that much compelling. Now, I was playing so much fucking video gaming, guys, like back in like 1999, 2000. That I literally had to sell my game characters just so that I can go to, like, I was at the point where I was supposed to be working and stuff. I'm like, I'm just not sleeping enough. So in order to wean myself off of this, it was like, rip the Band-Aid off, get rid of my addiction and sell all my shit. That's really what happened. And that's how, like, I finally stopped playing the thing. So, like, if you look at Ready Player One concept, people are spending more time in their supposed virtual lives. Sure, you can. People do that now, actually, if you think about it. Some people go into careers where they produce artwork, right? Like art is not something that if you're an artist, you're necessarily producing because you know you're going to make money. In fact, it's an extremely risky profession, right? You might get really good at it and become like a quote unquote professional and make tons of money off it, but there's no guarantee of this. The same as there is in gaming and such. There's no guarantee that you're going to find a great team, get top of that game, make all this money or whatever, right? Like if you watch the movie Ready Player One, there's no guarantee that kid was going to make it to the top necessarily. It just happened to be the team he had and a lot of luck and a lot of other features. So in that respect, it's not the metaverse experience or whatever you want to call it contains the same laws of the universe, like time, energy, mass, and all of the other like relationships that we think of. it just doesn't get rid of any of those things. So you're just like portraying it differently. And we do that now when we go to the movies, we do it when we go to when we play professional sports. Like if I'm a soccer player, like, you know, I'm entertaining you, you're paying me money to go play. And like, there's no need for this game to exist. It's just kind of like a suspension of your normal activities or normal life. And you're watching this arena where cool stuff is happening. I don't think there's anything like particularly innovative of that happening. Human beings just like to do that in groups, irrespective of whether it's in a video game or not. That's kind of how I think about it in a way. And I think it's fun. Like it's cool watching crap that you can't see in real life. It's why, like, you watch, like, you know, the Avengers movies or some shit, like, oh, look, the Hulk is throwing a tank again, you know, and you're like, oh, that's cool. We don't see that every day. So you'll see kind of things that, like, spark your imagination, and it allows the artists who produce those movies and produce those metaverses to express themselves. And so I think as an art form, digital art is proving to be super interesting. And it's going to become substantially more controversial as virtual art, AI derived art becomes almost indistinguishable from human art, which is becoming a problem. I don't know if you guys have used this website. Go to copy.ai, copy.ai. You're going to like this. Make yourself, if you haven't used this, make yourself a little account on that shit and go see what it does. What it does is, you type in some neat little terms like, okay, I want to talk about I want to sell you some, Pokemon cards. You can say, okay, I want to sell someone yellow Pokemon cards. I want you to use information from Pokemon.com and blah, blah, blah. In other words, you tell this thing to write you a essay that's persuasive to buy Pokemon cards from you. The system will basically punch out a whole bunch of copy and be grammatically correct. And you can just hit refresh if you don't like it exactly, and it'll create new shit for you. So it's going to come to a point now where the NPCs, the non-player characters in video games, will be completely indistinguishable from human beings very quickly. Like copy.ai is so good, you literally can't tell if a human wrote that in the background or a computer just generated this algorithmically or whatever, right? It's using machine learning. And what it's doing is every time you click, yes, I like this copy, I'm going to copy it and paste it somewhere, it realizes, hey, human beings like this. And it uses that for its machine learning algorithm to learn recursively and create basically a neural network system to basically improve its performance, right? And it's grammatically good. And then you can take that same copy and you could say, hey, you know what? I want to make this print out at a sixth grade level. There's a website called HemingwaySomethingOrAnother.com or some shit. And you can type in an essay in there, like take an essay you've written for college or whatever, copy it, paste it in that shit. And it will give you, it'll convert it to a sixth grade version or a fifth grade version. And it's hilarious. Like you look at it and you're like, okay, this has too many adverbs. A sixth grader wouldn't know what these are, what the meaning of this is. And there's too many commas in this sentence. Right, complex sentences. We're going to break this down with more periods, and the thing just does it for you, right? Like I don't even know what college kids write for essays nowadays. You get on copy.ai and this Hemingway shit, and like if I had that when I was in college, I would have gone under much more quickly. Anyway, the point is, like, this stuff is really, really cool. It's really getting indistinguishable from human-driven stuff. So, like, a lot of human language, natural language, is pretty good. Google Translate, if you haven't used that app, is pretty damn good. You basically dictate something you want to say and say Spanish, and the thing is going to spit out Spanish. And it will even speak the Spanish for you so that, like, you know, if you're traveling or something and you're like, you're in Peru and you need to translate, you know, something to buy a coffee, and you're like, you don't know Spanish, you say it in English and you have your phone translate it into Spanish or whatever. So the capabilities of those systems in a gaming context, right? You're going to wind up with a whole bunch of NPCs. You don't even know if they're human beings or not before too long. At least the experience of what an NPC is in a video game today, in MMOs where, like, you know, they have a prepackaged quest and blah, blah, blah. The systems are going to get really good at knowing what kind of quests people like, what kind of quests you like, and actually generating in-game content that is interesting specifically to you by hacking your sort of like wants and needs. Like, so it'll use information about you. The more you interact with them, the more it's going to tailor the game to who you are. And it's going to be extraordinary. Not it's going to be, it is extraordinarily addicting, to the point where like video game addiction will be taken to such an extreme level that people will be regulating this shit and being like, and like, okay, the people aren't farming food anymore. They're all playing in Ready Player One now. You know, now the robots have to make the food or whatever. Like, that's how severe the addiction is, when like a computer is literally tweaking every single dopamine response that you ever had, learning from what you like, from every click that you make, and then retailing their on the fly 24/7.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah,
it's crazy. It's impressive though, but it's just information overdrive. And then there's other interesting side effects it has psychologically. The way your brain works, it just wasn't designed for that. So the problem is that like the universe is an interesting sort of like object. Your brain interacts with our universe, and it has mechanisms in place to prevent problems like hopelessness, depression, despair, anxiety, PTSD, and all sorts of other interesting like obsessions and all these things. If you look at all the axis, disorders on the psychiatry chain, most of them are when a normal function of the brain is sort of broken, right? Like, we're all going to die. I got bad news for you guys. Like, the bearish position here is you're all going to die. At some point, you're going to die, but you don't worry about it today, right? I'm going to die. Dave's going to die. Darren is going to die. But we don't think about it on a moment-to-moment basis. Why? We all live in a collective sort of like delusion, so to speak, where hope itself technically, like, there's nothing about the universe specifically that's hopeful if you don't fabricate some afterlife story or God or whatever, right? The world blows up, the sun envelops the earth and we all die. Okay, whatever. So like entropy takes over and like there's no evidence scientifically. And that's kind of what the story of Adam and the apple and, the tree of life is that like knowledge does not give you power in that sense. It actually is the core source of despair and sin and all the other things, right? Like a lot of religions talk about this stuff. Anyway, point is, like, if you think about how like the mind works, when you're living your day-to-day life, right, you are living, like, you look in the mirror, you're like, shit, I've got too many gray hairs or whatever, I don't look as good as I need to be or whatever, and you just sort of like you're always in a constant state of denial in a sense, right? Like, about something about your life. That's normal, that's fine. You have to have that denial, otherwise you get hopeless and depressed and whatever. So it's when you actually know the truth about the world and the universe, that's when it actually becomes much more painful, right? And the interesting thing about, if you come to realize, hey, wait a minute, this machine is just tweaking everything that makes me happy, right? It's tweaking my sexual desires, it's tweaking my, like, my appetites, it's trying to serve me up advertising telling me I need pizza because it knows I love pizza at this time of day. It's a whole funny thing, like the Siri suggestions. I don't know if you've used your phone, you have that little Siri thing. And there was a delivery I was waiting for from a website, not a website, but an app. And I had bought some shit and it started recognizing that I was checking every morning to see if that shit had been delivered or I had to buy a suitcase, my wife who was traveling. And, but she, it was like time sensitive. I had to get the suitcase in time so she can travel with the thing. Right. So anyway, I order the thing. It's on its way. And I'm just checking every day to see if they shipped it. And Siri realized, oh, wait, you're checking this every day. So now every day it's saying at 8 in the morning, it's telling me you are checking this app every day. Siri's suggestion is to go check this website to see if So in other words, it's learning from your behavior, modifying what it serves up to you. But eventually you realize, holy shit, like, okay, if you take that to the nth level, the computer is just fucking with you 24/7. And all of a sudden, the delusion that your life has meaning gets broken by the computer system. Right. So like the Terminator version of AI, where the thing like has weapons and shit and shoots everybody, that stuff is nonsense. You can just decimate the human brain much, much easier than that. You look at people who are video game addicts who've gotten divorced from playing too many video games and whatnot. And you can definitely fuck people up, right? Like the systems can definitely mess with you. No question about it, right? I know if any of you have played games long enough, you know people that went through that shit. I have hilarious stories about that stuff. Well, maybe not hilarious, but like stories. Anyway, so like the reality is like these systems, AI, computing, metaverse, these are all things that we wish we might have for entertainment. But a lot of times we're eating from the fruit in the tree of the Garden of Eden, in the sense that like these things are going to fuck you up. You just don't realize it yet. And you're like, wait, maybe, like, it's like an alcoholic. Like, maybe I shouldn't have picked up that one drink that one time at that party when I was a kid. Maybe I'm fucking raging drunk with cirrhosis right now, right? Like, how many people that you know have cirrhosis or liver problems from drinking and they wish they just never touched it? Or they can't stop smoking and their lungs are all fucked up and they're like, oh, I wish I never picked it up. 80% of smokers wish they never started smoking, right? Like, that's an example. So by the time you figured out that the metaverse is fucking up your life or crypto or whatever, right? It's just too late, right? Like, it's just already like sucked you in and you're already doing this shit and you're just screwed. So it's a weird problem. And I think the AI stuff is going to make it way more powerful. Like, you won't even know with any experience that you're in how badly you're getting manipulated. Because the whole point is you're actually literally paying to be manipulated, right? Like, why are you playing a video game? Are you playing it because it's shitty? Or you played it because people like beta tested this and checked to see if the art is good and like, you know, found out if human beings like this shit, it's a good game, and now they're selling it to you, right? You follow what I'm saying? You're literally paying to be manipulated. You don't go to movies because they're shitty. You want the one that makes your dopamine levels go up and it's a feel-good movie, right? Like, that's why you go to see Top Gun 2, because it's a fucking cool movie. And you're like, oh, look at all the airplanes and Tom Cruise. He's smiling and shit. And I'm happy. You know, summer's good. So, you know, like, you're actually paying for that suspension of disbelief. You're paying to be manipulated in a sense. And or call it entertainment manipulation. Call it whatever you want. The point is you're paying for an experience. And that experience changes you, at least for the short term or the long term. And when AI is doing this 24/7, then you realize, wait a minute, you start asking yourself, wait, does life have actual meaning? And then you're going to have like more people shooting up malls and shit. Like the reason why we have people shooting up malls and like, you know, school children is not because of guns. Like, people make this mistake. Like, there's plenty of countries, with lots of guns. It's these weird sorts of like cognitive, like brain damage you get from the type of experiences you have when you break from the norm of mammalian sort of like biological activity, and you live in this sort of like alternate universe of like this reality divorced from like normal empathy. Because if you think about it, if you can like talk with a computer that literally serves you up dopamine on a stick 24/7 and just sort of like a carrot, you know, to just keep on pulling you in, how in the world are your spouses or your friends going to make you as compelled to follow, right? Like, there's no way. Like, who can compete with that shit 24/7, right? They can't. So what happens? You start becoming less empathetic towards your fellow man because you're like, fuck it, I don't need them. I have this entertainment over here, right? And then it at some point when you become completely disconnected, you know, like from all the usual empathetic connections, you don't need anybody else. They don't need you. You got robots taking care of your shit. It doesn't bother, you know, a sociopath to then suit up a school because their brain is divorced from the idea of human beings' lives having actual value, right? And it's interesting, like video game content that has lots of shooting, like a lot of like Call of Duty, whatever. People that play a lot of violent video games are not the ones that go shoot up people, actually. Data clearly shows this now. That's a weird disconnect too. So like, you're almost desensitized to the idea of killing, right? That's not what gets those sociopaths killed, shooting up schools. Rarely do you have like a school shooting, for example, where the shooter is found to be an ultra video game player shooting at people all the time and successful at it, right? Like, that's not who you're talking about here. You're not talking about people who are successful deer hunters now turning like into like school shooters. You have these weird sociopathic behaviors, but it's rarely the more common like gun owner or archetypes that you think of that would be the ones doing this shit, right? It's a fascinating like thing, the analysis of that. But my suspicion is that if you look at like the history of the United States over the last 100 years, and you kind of look at what has happened to people's minds, it's not as shocking to you. you know, if you connect, you have to connect a long series of dots of how the brain works to understand why you have things like school shootings and all those kind of things in the United States. They will happen elsewhere too. It's just a matter of time. And there will be other forms of like weird mass murder. But I think that's what happens when you have systems like starting from the telephone, then progressing to television and other things that basically create a new metaverse that was not a biological metaverse, but one guided by technology. We're talking about everything from the light bulb to, right? Like if you look at like, do we know exactly what constant exposure to fluorescent light bulbs with the resonant frequencies causes? We know in some people it causes seizures, right? So like the precise effect on your brain, how you form, it's not really always clear what these things do to you. And, you know, why is it that this is more common in one country versus the other with similar gun exposure and tech exposure? They're, you know, these things have multifactorial elements to them, but it's still a fascinating like process. I think you're going to have a lot of sociopathies in the sort of like metaverse development arc. It's going to be weird because the politicians that you think are going to be the ones that are going to save you with regulations, right? Even if you're some like a pro-regulation individual, the problem is those same politicians will be living in the exact same metaverse as you are, right? So they'll actually be susceptible to all the same fuckery. Like a great example would be Donald Trump and Twitter, right? Like remember how, like, so, and this is not an anti-Trump statement or whatever, like, I don't give a fuck what you think about the politics. The if you watched what Trump was tweeting about on Twitter, you're like, wait a minute, that was a tweet that came out of Twitter that now became national policy, not his tweets, but somebody else's. You'll have some troll tweeting something random. Trump happens to read it and he's responding to this and reacting in real time. And I'm like, that wasn't a thing 5 minutes ago. Right. Like I'm in medicine and like COVID was going on and shit. And like something would happen and he'd tweet about it. I'm like, that's not even a thing. That's some random dude on Twitter that's like, you know, posting some bullshit. And you just posted that as some kind of like comment from a president. And then people think that's suddenly national policy. But I watched this sort of metaverse idea like sort of happen in real time. And it's not always like going to lead to the best outcome, even though people think free speech is amazing. You know, if I say, you know, stupid shit all day and eventually you act upon it, you're like, oh, he told me to buy Terra UST and it got all fucked up. See, notice how the metaverse can fuck up your life. Like, like, oh, well, whoops, you know, sorry, guys. Anyway, so the point is like, but with when you watched it in real time, like things emerging in the metaverse space, whether it's AI driven or whether it's whatever, you know, that leads to human activity and more humans act upon that activity, retweet it, send a bunch of things. And then all of a sudden a new outcome happens. And it wasn't an outcome that was clear that was going to happen 3 days ago. It's like a massive butterfly effect, right? And now you went from one guy trolling and saying one thing to then another group of people saying it in another group, and then another group of people sort of turning it into reality. Bank runs, for example, would happen in this way. And that's exactly like just a month ago, people were talking about KuCoin, right? They're like, oh, yeah, Celsius went down and Voyager went down. KuCoin's about to go down too, right? How many of you guys saw those messages? Like, and or moved your funds off of KuCoin because they said that, like, you know, it was going to take a dirt nap. Nothing happened at this point, but that doesn't mean it couldn't have if enough people said, oh, fuck it, we're leaving KuCoin. And let's say KuCoin was actually leveraging out your tokens, right? So the metaverse space, like, or whatever you want to call it, the internet space, does affect your mind. It does make you do things you would not have otherwise done, for good or for bad or whatever it is. And ultimately, it's going to be the same thing in real life. If you choose a bunch of metaverse friends that are assholes, maybe that rubs off on you, or maybe it doesn't. Maybe the opposite happens. Maybe you're like, oh, those guys are a bunch of assholes. I'm never going to be like them, right? Like how you react ultimately is up to you. But, you know, in a way, to the extent that free will is actually real and not just an illusion, but you can't not react to things you see on the internet, right, or hear about. And if you enhance that with AI-based manipulation, I can only imagine. I swear to you, go to copy.ai and look at it. You can actually pick, do I want to convince this person to buy a product? I put the persuasive button, and the copy will come out to convince Dave here to buy my widget, right? And you can click on other, like, little buttons, like, okay, do I want to tout this as a luxury item? Do I want to tout this as a budget item, right? And the copy will change based on what I'm trying to manipulate Dave to do. So what's going to happen in the near future is you're going to go to a website. Let's say you're going to the website for my gym. You go to the website and the copy is going to change based on the reader, not necessarily on the message that that gym wants to send, right? It wants to get you as a member. And now, like, because you're known to be someone looking for a budget, you type into Google, I want the cheapest gym in my town, right? So they already know you're a budget conscious individual. So you're going to get funneled via the Google Analytics ad system. You're going to go and be funneled to, okay, we're going to send them to a landing page, or I'm going to adjust the copy on my website to include everything that suggests that, like, this $100 gym is actually a budget compared to a $200 gym, and therefore, like, you're getting off ahead, and therefore it's going to try to convince you to go do this thing. That's normal what Google Analytics does now. It's how ad campaigns work. It takes what you type and it gets you to certain types of advertising, and the ad, you know how the Google ads at the very top of your Google ad page have a bunch of like interesting words and things. You can tailor that per campaign, per search terms, right? Like, so if someone types budget gym, they're going to get one set of terms. If someone says personal trainer, they're going to get another set of terms. To the extent that you can go crazy and actually have a different website they go to based on which terms they use, you can change the photography. So in other words, if like I want to have a great physique and like, you know, I want to make my ass bigger and make my tits look bigger or whatever, you can basically tailor that shit. Have them go to a website with a bunch of big asses and big tits, and next thing you know, you can convince people to go to this gym. Like, and then the other person's like, I'm 90 years old. I want to go to a gym where, you know, I can learn how to, like, you know, like help my arthritis. Well, then, like, it'll have a bunch of geriatric people on the, and the pictures change and everything changes. We are like, but like, we're very close to the point where not only can it do that, but the AI can generate a brand new set of pictures with brand new people on them, and actually to the point where you could basically take sort of like almost like cookie data, and you could say, hey, you know what, Dave likes, you know, blonde girls with whatever, and so therefore, like, and it can take pictures maybe in your like Google library or some shit, scan them together, make a fake human with what's it called, the I forget the name of the deep fakes. It can make a human being. So in other words, even the models in the website images are a discombobulated version of people you already know. So if you are already attracted to or have friends that have certain features, it'll introduce those features into those faces, show you advertising where you're literally being manipulated by people you know, right? It'll have features of your kid's eyes or some shit in it. And it subconsciously, you're like, hey, I trust this person. I'm going to go and go to the gym at this place, right? This technology is there right now to be. It's just the implementation on most websites is not there, but web 2.0 based recursive neural engine based mass manipulation is just like minutes away. It's like so close that like it, like all of the tech is literally there right now. It's just the implementation has not been developed and put into place yet. Baroness, go ahead. That was just like crazy stuff.
I was letting you go in full circle on the AI and I had to like put my hand up when you made a weird science reference. But weird science. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I'm gonna cut this magazine character out and put together, make a real person.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly.
But but in general, what we're not just using for analytics, because generally what we're using is Google at this point in time of open source for the AI to reference to, but the user base of what we like in imagery, of trying to figure out what is real art, which is not, it's almost like, a TV shows with a green screen at the point in time where we're like, oh man, this is so great. 1970s came about, like, oh wow, they put a dinosaur in here in the caveman and blah, blah. This is awesome. And we watch it now. It's like, oh, that was so fake.
Yeah. If you go in today and you use OpenAI, like you use their, you guys have seen it all over the NFT space where there's AI generated like content, right? What that machine is doing is the neural network is going and recording, every time someone produces one of those artworks, the system is recording the ones that people decide to keep versus the ones they want to chunk. So it's getting a really, really good analog hack capability of your mind or the minds of humans to like what art principles. So in other words, all of the art principles that you think of, like, you know, color and form and, you know, composition, all, I don't remember all the art principles, lines and whatever, like, it's been a while since art class, but the point is all of the various color combinations and all of the palettes and whatnot that people like in the composition, like, you know, you want to have, you know, the face look like this or that, like Picasso, if you, you know, recall Picasso's work, a lot of what Picasso did was make you see things that were sort of unexpected and basically hack the mind. There's a University of California, San Diego, neuroscience professor by the name of V.S. Ramachandran. You can catch him on YouTube or whatever. And he covers all this stuff where basically artists essentially sort of work to hack your mind. The AI for OpenAI is doing this at the speed of fucking light. I mean, it is basically creating a database of the all the humans that interact with this thing and quickly determine, like, wait, what do people not like? What do they like? Do they like to see things that are more like a hint of realism? Like, so you pipe a bunch of search terms in. I got some, you can get some great images, but one of these apps is called Dream. Let me see what it's called. You can kind of play with it if you, and there's a lot of these now. They just use OpenAI's platform. It's called Dream, D-R-E-A-M. And it's like a, it's now ad driven, but they're getting amazingly good. Like you'll have a genre like, okay, I want my image to look like, I don't know, cyberpunk and not cyberpunk, like steampunk. So it has a steampunk like theme. And then you type in some words like, I'm going to use circulation and like a car engine. And it's going to take those terms and it merges them into something interesting, right? Those are getting better and better and better as time goes on. And that's how the machine works. It basically has a neural network. It assesses your responses. It even, some of these are actually assessing how much time your eyes spend on the actual picture. So if you are deleting it instantly, it's like, oh, okay, well, this was not something that, this process was not something someone liked. So the neural network records that as sort of negative. And so it's taking positive and negative feedback from people and building a neural network and then generating this stuff out of thin air. And eventually you just basically have hacked the human mind. You figured out how to generate max amounts of dopamine and such. You'll probably see a significant portion of this enter into other spaces, like some of the really, really common things that you have now. Like a lot of people like pornography, for example, they get their dopamine hit, right? Like imagine though the difference being that like, okay, there's porn out there and what's going to happen is the AI is going to generate like the eyes that you like, the face that you like, literally make you love, like it'll make you fall in love. You're like, oh shit, like no, my wife's not my dream girl, this is my dream girl. Like in other words, in your brain it's going to be able to figure out what the hell it is you like. And you know how like some people get married, they're like, I don't know if this was the one for me. Like, I don't know, I married him, but like, I'm not sure, right? Like, and then they're always wondering. There's those people that are wondering, wait, maybe there was a better, you know, pick out there or whatever. It's really, really toxic in that sense to think in that way, because obviously, like, there's no way in the universe that anything is like you. Like you met your husband, happened to be in a place at a certain time at a certain school or wherever it is you met him, right? And your life could have been completely different had you not walked, you know, on that sidewalk that day for that moment, right? So there's a lot of luck involved, or, you know, call it whatever you want, you know, divine intervention if you want to, whatever it is you think love is and how it's formed. Like, but the computer can be like, okay, I know exactly the kind of dude Baroness likes. And, you know, based on the movie she's watched and all this other shit and how much time her eyes spend on that particular character. And they're like, oh, this girl likes Tom Cruise. But you know what? If I recreate Tom Cruise, she's going to notice that for Tom Cruise. And, you know, that's not going to be good enough. I need to create someone just as interesting as Tom Cruise because she likes him. And then convince her to buy, like, you know, a certain brand of toilet paper or something, like, you know, like the systems are going to get super interesting. But you, love and what love is and why you love certain art are no different. There's sort of a composition, a feel you get, a sense of like a person's voice. Like what is attraction after all, right? And ultimately what will happen is once you have all these sort of things quantified about a person, you can basically play on that to essentially manipulate people at some level. But also it's going to create a tremendous amount of depression, right? Because imagine if a computer can figure out what the fuck you love, right? But no real artist or no real human being can regenerate that for you. You're fucked, basically, right? Your life is over except in that computer, right? Because like the rest of the time, the rest of your life, you've eaten from the tree, from the Garden of Eden, right? And like every other fruit just tastes like a lesser fruit after that. You're like, shit, I just wish like this Olive Garden, shit, I wish I was back at the, you know, Garden of Eden where I can eat from there, right? So you're going to want to go back to the Garden of Eden because you won't want to leave it, I think. And a lot of AI-based movies have like covered this topic to some extent or the other, right? Like it's the outcome is almost certainly extreme addiction, that from what we know about other forms of addiction, like alcohol, cigarettes, I don't know, like porn, whatever, right? Like plenty of examples of addiction to sort of like things that are human created, right? Like non-real worlds, right? We understand addiction when it comes to even pharmacology, like chemical addiction, but visual addiction, where your brain is forming chemicals in response to certain things, is definitely a thing if you look at people that have like porn addiction problems and stuff like that. But the AI version of this will be so extreme as to just take your breath away. Like it's gonna be interesting, because I look at Copy AI, use some of their shit and you're like, okay, that's really good writing, like fuck it, I would have used this in English class. I didn't even want to show I have a ninth grade high school kid going to high school. I was like, I want to show him this thing because I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. But then I'm like, fuck, he's going to use this for every essay. Like, you know, like there's no way. And there's no teacher on this planet that's going to be able to figure out that's what you're using, by the way. No way, because it is that good. It is grammatically perfect. It is going to be able to dumb it down to like a grade level lower than you want. Right. So it's like you won't sound like you're too smart. It can literally dumb it down to whatever grade level. Like, you know, there is, I don't even know what they're going to teach in schools anymore when it comes to writing with this stuff on the loose. It's interesting stuff.
I mean, I just today came across with it that, I mean, you can copy, you can paste a text in it and it's going to change it, like with the synonyms and, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's going to be like, because at the schools, you do an exam or you write a paper, whatever. It's going to be run through this plagiarism. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Anti-plagiarism. But those won't work, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And I noticed like when I tried to use some copy for a website, I was literally using this thing to see if I can like spruce up my website thing that I have doing. And I was like, oh, maybe I can manipulate people to buy some shit using this. And and so I use this thing. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to work. And all I have to do is do a quick proofread of it to make sure that it actually like approximately says what I want. But I'm like, I don't want to figure this shit out. Like it takes like this thing takes a paragraph that I've written and makes it sound better within 30, you know, within a second. I mean, it literally is at the click of a button. It doesn't even take time to produce the content. It's instantaneous. And if you just click it over and over again, it will generate slightly different versions. So the funny thing is it takes me longer to read what it wrote than it takes me to click a button to generate the text. It's crazy.
You know what that sounds like? You were previously talking about like putting a quarter in and playing a game, then you lose.
Exactly. That's exactly what that is.
That sounds like we are the characters in
we are now the AI's characters.
Metaverse.
Yeah, we're the fucking idiots is what I'm trying to say to you. Like, you're exactly right. Like the metaverse is us being the pawns. That's exactly what that is. In other words, you took life, right? That you were given with a real world and a planet, some sun and sky and shit to look at. And you decided to go bury yourself in this computer where it's going to fuck with your mind 24/7. Like, in other words, this is not where you're going to find freedom, right? It's just not. Like, the quarter arcade was a perfect, segue. Yeah, Hank, go ahead. Hank, were you about to say something? Are we still going to, I can't tell if I'm talking to myself. Hank, you there? Or Dave? Yeah. So, it's some of these methods that are available now, and maybe you guys have some other ones that are good hacks, but it would be funny if like you could actually, you know what a good developer could do is you could combine the API of copy.ai and you could have it change the copy of your a website, like for an e-commerce site, and have it change literally every few days. Like have it just arbitrarily change every paragraph of the main pages, the landing pages, so that Google thinks you're basically creating new content every few days. And you probably could actually trick the Google algorithms as they stand today and actually wreck Google's ability to make money off of those things by like completely like obliterating it. So Dave, a good example would be like, I don't know if you guys design websites at all or have played with them, but one of the ways that you can generate increased content to your website, or I'm sorry, traffic, is by having content that people read on blogs. So you'll notice a lot of websites have blogs, and not because they're like fucking prolific writers and, you know, they're amazing like articles. You'll notice a lot of them are stupid ass articles about something. Like I remember I was trying to figure out how to build a back patio or something for my brother's house. And I'm like, I'm looking for a special situation. So I type in something where I'm trying to build a patio, and some company created a blog that sells patios in some city. And they did it because that way, if I come and search for that blog, then what will happen is their search engine will get organic hits. I'm sorry, their website will get organic hits. That will rise when people search for, I don't know, a new patio canopy or whatever. And their business will rise on the list of possible businesses that's, you know, so this is how people use blogs and stuff to like generate SEO or search engine optimization. But like they didn't write the article because they thought that everyone in that town was going to come see it. They just wanted Google to upvote their website compared to all other websites. You guys understand? Like, so in other words, that article was not engaging me to buy something from that particular company because that company is in one local town. I'm not going to go buy my, you know, like back patio porch thing from that company. So what it does is, so now imagine if you had like what Dave was talking about, like what if you could basically just scour the internet, plagiarize whatever you want, run it through copy.ai, stick it in a blog post and generate blog after blog after blog, which then generates more traffic to your website with bullshit robo content. Well, guess what? Welcome to crypto. That's exactly what happens in crypto. The number of robo articles today far exceeds the number of real articles being written by a substantial margin, right? And a lot of them you'll notice on a regular basis, they're everywhere. You'll have it, they'll masquerade as like analytical articles. They'll say, oh, look, the RSI on the, you know, whatever, the Bitcoin chart on the daily chart shows that like relative weakness, blah, blah, blah. Literally, it says nothing. It just says a bunch of gobbledygook. You read it. And then you're like, oh, like, yeah, the article says that Bitcoin is bearish today or whatever. And you're like, OK, I'm not going to buy any. So some of those articles generate like the content when it's bearish tends to be perpetually bearish because all the mathematical indicators show that the coin is down. Actually, the best time to buy is when those articles all start like claiming bearishness, because essentially that means that it's manipulating as many retail people as, not manipulating, but it influences retail people, whether it's manipulation or not, to basically either not buy or sell because they're afraid of whatever this article said, right? So then what happens is that, you know, everyone follows that, the price goes down, the leverage traders get wrecked, and eventually it all does it over again. And you'll notice this, and I've seen like people on Twitter like repeat what those robo articles have said is some sort of like factual shit. It's hilarious. So now you have human beings reacting essentially to algorithmically created articles that are just bullshit. And it's even attributed to an author. It'll say author is so-and-so, and this is the robotically generated content. It's clearly robotically generated. It's just simple, like technical analysis bullshit where like you can take RSI and, you know, money flow index or whatever your technical indicators are, and you can basically create an article about it. And it's a copy.ai concept where the copy doesn't matter, right? All it does is take data, like the price of a coin, how much it went down from the top, right? You can just take basic mathematical facts create a narrative around it, write an interesting article, and then now all of a sudden sell ad copy on the internet, right? Those websites aren't even like manipulators necessarily. They're not necessarily there to make you buy Bitcoin or not buy it, right? But you do end up seeing people react to these things, but maybe the only reason they created that site was to get you to look at the Google ads on their website, right? Like that might be their only goal. Here you are making crypto decisions and shit based on this metaverse that you live in, being manipulated 24/7. And by the way, when you read these articles, you cannot help but react to them. Like every time you look at the price of Bitcoin, for example, or Ethereum, whatever the fuck you're buying, it affects your mind, right? If it didn't affect your mind is broken, right? Because like, okay, like, you know, like it's simply factual information. Your brain has to contain it, react to it. Even doing nothing is reacting to it, by the way, right? So at the end of the day, it's like, it's not, you have three possible options: do nothing, do something, you know, buy or sell, or, you know, do nothing, right? So you have several options, and at the end of the day, you're going to do something, and the more data that enters your head, you're going to react to it. So this is the same thing in that, like, this kind of metaverse space, when you blend AI into it, it's just a recipe for total fuckery. And ultimately, like, think about how the systems work. The validators make money on crypto networks if you make more transactions, if you spend time on them, right? It's like any other business. The system will be designed for you to participate and spend more time, more money, and more effort in that space. And whatever incentives it has to do to get you there, those are going to be the most successful crypto and AI platforms, right? The ones that can manipulate you the most are the ones that are going to make the most money, pure and simple. What do you think a user interface is? If you really like the wallet that you use on whatever, it's because it's an analog hack of your mind. And essentially, it's like, okay, I like the user interface. I like this product instead of this one. Right? We've all realized that user interfaces make a difference to people's experience, and it drives people to spend money on certain things and not others, right? Like, look at Amazon. Like, you think that review system, right? Like, they perfected that review system, and now it's like you don't feel like going to any other website because you're like, shit, if I want to buy a new set of cutlery for my house, you're like, shit, I better check the Amazon reviews, make sure that the fork is going to be good enough. I mean, it can be the stupidest ass shit you could buy at Walmart. And now you're checking Amazon reviews to make sure your cutlery is at 5-star level, right? Think about how it's changed how you behave and tell me you haven't been sort of hacked, right? So Amazon is successful for that reason. And any technique that can be used to sort of like be more convincing for you, those are going to be executed. And the AI with machine learning does it way faster. If you think about it, like, how long did it take for you to become an avid Amazon user, right? It took probably, like, let me think about this. Okay, broadband was sort of like more common late 90s. Then the 2000s comes along. Okay, fine. Like, early 2000s, you're getting smartphones, you know, and eventually you're shopping online. You trust credit cards on there and everything eventually, right? And you get to a point, and then now here we are in 2022, and you are basically trusting a bunch of users who put 5-star reviews, or maybe you trust the 4.2 star because fuck it, nothing's perfect, right? And now you're buying based on these 5-star reviews. You're buying your shit on there. And how long did that take to change the human race to that level, or change an entire country's behavior, right? Think about what machine learning is going to do in 10 years with that kind of power. Like, forget about 10 years. Amazon is a blip on the radar compared to the mass manipulation available through AI. It's going to be really pretty interesting to watch, to the point where I wonder if some of us are going to be like, fuck it, I'm not using this anymore. Like, I find myself personally, like, I don't know if you guys have done this, but I've turned down the notifications for almost everything on my phone now, right? Like, I don't even give a shit if coming from work. If it's email or whatever, I'm like, fuck it, call me, or like, you don't need me badly enough. It's like that now, right? You're like, because every single little, you know, beep and blip and email is like just at some point anxiety provoking, because you're getting nonstop stimulation from these fucking things. Like, you're like, oh, what do they want me to do now? Right? Like, that's how it feels like at some point when you get enough of them. And if you run a business like I do, you run like, oh, like Telegram, holy shit. I did the stupid, so I decided to be on the committee for the like, I don't know why I decided to do this, but like they voted me in to be a committee member for that, like the Terra, you know, whatever, rebirth, fucking whatever, like distributing funds to the people that are developing on Terra, right? And I'm like, the number of Telegram beeps and blings I got just from that alone, right? I'm like, how in the hell do developers sit on Telegram and Discord without having brain damage? Right? Like it's nonstop beeping and stuff. You're like, this app is stupid. I can't keep using this. Right. So you end up giving up on it. So I think that's the end result of a lot of the mega stimulation of your brain. The same has happened in video games and MMOs, is that you eventually, like, you're like, fuck this, I give up. And you're like, you go back to real life. So that's like at first I was like, oh, notifications, cool, right? You guys remember this one? Oh wow, yeah, it'll tell me when my email comes in. This is amazing shit, right? I don't have to remember. And then it's like 24/7. You're like, okay, I can't do this anymore, right? You went from living in the Garden of Eden to living in the self-made hell in the course of a few years. It just didn't take that long, right? So that's why that allegory of the apple really makes sense for tech.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was yesterday and the day before that, I had detox from mobile. I had the same thing, the notifications. I turned the sounds off. I still get the vibration. And time to time, just tap on my pocket, check my phone is there, but not picking it up. But still, I made the move, like, my hand is going into my pocket. Then I'm like, no. Then what I did was just turn it off and put it back to my pocket. So every time I would like tap, oh, my phone is there, but I'm not checking it because it's not vibrating. I just forget it. And like, a few hours, I'm like, I feel so calm.
Yeah, you have to spend one week. You have to spend one week and go, wait a minute. Any app that I touch every day, I need to just delete the fucking thing. That's basically what you need to do, right? Like, if it doesn't bring you some joy in some way, if you're like just repeatedly pushing some shit, like whether it's a wallet, you know, checking your balance on your crypto or whatever the hell it is, right? What you should do is just basically delete it. And if you don't plan to touch it anyway, just don't look at it and just leave it there. And then let it ride, and then go back and look at it on your desktop or something if you really need to. But it's just too, like, this tendency to want to look and get so high, right? And it's just not productive. It's just a waste of time to some extent. So it's kind of like, but yeah, for sure. Like, the notifications are funny. I got to the point where I'm like, at first I thought it was just the sound that was bothering me. But eventually you got to the point where you're looking at your phone so much, even the stupid badge numbers on your email, you're like, fuck that. I know there's emails there, right? You wait 2 hours, you know they're there. So there's why you even have the little badge number? Because once that badge number hits 10, you're like, oh shit, now you're anxious. You got to open the thing and delete all those stupid emails and whatever anyway, right? But the only problem is if you turn everything off, it's like 2 days goes by, there's 600 emails. That's not going to be good, right? So then you don't know what to do. So if you have like professional work that relies upon that, then eventually you realize, you know what happens, Dave, is ultimately what happens is that you realize, well, the professional stuff I have to do. So then what you end up doing is you decide, okay, I'm going to eliminate all of this that's entertainment, right? So eventually what happens is then the weird side effect happens. You're no longer playing on your phone. It's purely a work object, right? So then what happens is each of the notifications make you even more anxious, annoyed, and you want to see it even less, right? This is the problem. So then even the fun parts of why you have a phone and shit, they get wrecked because the stimulus, the Pavlovian response to continually getting work shit on your phone sort of like ruins all of that from any kind of entertainment perspective. So even if the metaverse was fun, if work keeps invading it, it's not fun anymore. Like, that's how that plays out, right? So it's very funny. I know for the last month I've been like, pretty much any notification, I'm like, why is that thing notifying me? Like, you know, so now I'm like deleting as many as I can and finally got to the point where it's like settled in a little bit, I think. It's funny. But yeah, it's, you definitely are happier after a couple of days. You're like, holy shit, like, that was just really annoying. Way overstimulated. So anyway. All right, guys, it's been fun. I guess we'll catch up another time. The evening tirade. It's basically my unload of intellectual bullshit that you can come hang out with. So it's just like a de-stressing sort of thing, I suppose, maybe. But it's fun, guys.
We all here together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully a lot of good things are coming this year and a lot of fun stuff. But yeah, trying not to overthink this stuff too much. It just gets, it just messes with you. If you got to step off the metaverse for a little while every day. All right, guys, have fun.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part two of the two-part CeFi space, using Cosmos yields effectively and other random stuff. Recorded on Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.
Put your hands up like you got a couple questions. Ain't no misdirection, just a bunch of flexing. All aggressive, insane from all directions. Smoke blows in when I start a session. Blank canvas, blaze up the handlers. Rocking back and forth like I got the van stuck. Don't grind the clutch, mind you hush. Put your mask on and don't touch the antlers. Feeling untouchable when I'm on the verse. But in the universe, I'm just writing some words. Enticing these nerds while I'm laying out my memoirs. Like, remember when I had to fight the centaur? I'm a book nerd, let me take you on the journey. Lost in the labyrinth, searching out the lost fern. For certain, got the taxes included. Acting like a writer, never felt secluded. Shit and line them up. Just another fixed game of try my luck. Go lighten up, dog. It could always be worse. Unless you're in the back of a hearse, then you're dead. Or put it in new speakers. It's a toss up, driver or just tweakers. Don't stress, yo. I've done the research. Living life like a bunch of fucking lemurs. It's a remake off the cutting floor. We take a little bit of poison and put it in the cheesecake. Tastes great, less filling, less stress, more killing. As he blew the cornerstone out the building and the rocks came tumbling down all humble. Feels like we're drowning in a little puddle. Rebuttal? I should be taking off in the shuttle. Getting high in space with the Hubble.
Terra Spaces.